and welcome to the Keeper Cup podcast. Chad Young and Pete Ball with you. We are both, licking our wounds a little bit after some rough wild card series for our teams, but at least you can enjoy from afar the Blue Jays just utterly dismantling the Yankees. And it's nice because we're recording this Sunday evening, so we already know that dismantling was, pretty complete in those first two games. And nobody's playing tomorrow, so we don't have to worry about this looking bad by tomorrow. Unfortunately for me, not only do I want to see the Tigers lose, but being in Seattle, I am a Mariners, even though I'm a Guardians fan, I'm a Mariners season ticket holder. My son's a Mariners fan. He and I went to game one last night. I'm now watching, I'm just watching the game day on the MLB app of game two. It's just in the first inning here, but the DS has not gone as well for me as it maybe has for you, kind of has for you, at least from a Schadenfreude perspective. You're enjoying, but not the best playoffs.
It's good to see them lose. One of my buddies that I play a lot of fantasy baseball with is a Yankees fan, so I've been giving him grief. I'm happy with the season though. Like, if you're a Red Sox fan, this season almost everything went right. Like, very few things went wrong outside of Christian Campbell and Tristan Cassis. I mean, this season was a dream. So I'm okay with them losing. It's fine. It is. We weren't going to win the World Series this year.
Yeah, and I think as a Guardians fan, I think I even said this on the show last week that, like, you're playing with house money at this point, right? Like, our season was over in June, and we got to play into October, which is just wild. I think as a Red Sox fan, I don't know. I thought I early in the season thought they had a better opportunity to go deeper than this. It just really didn't come together for them. But you look at that team for next year, and you got guys like Tolley and Early should be like their immediate upgrades to the rotation, because the rotation needs some upgrades. You're offloading a decent amount of money in players you didn't need and didn't want that you'll be able to reinvest, hopefully. And I do think, you'll get more out of Campbell. I think you'll get more out of Marcelo Mayer. You're getting a full season of Roman Anthony. Like, there's a lot to look forward to as a Red Sox fan. So, Guardians fan, we have some of that. We got, full season of Chase DeLauder, assuming he stays healthy, knock on wood. We should have a full season, or at least close to a full season, of Travis Bezzano. I certainly hope he's the opening day second baseman. There is no reason for him not to be. They seem to have found a lot of pieces in their rotation down the stretch. Joey Cantillo looks legit. Parker Messick looks legit. So I'm feeling good. The big difference, of course, is that, like, the Red Sox have, was it Giolito's coming off the books? Liam Hendricks comes off the books. They offloaded a lot of money when they traded Devers. Like, they should have money to spend. Guardians, we got rid of Clase. So I guess that's money that we get back, but, like, they're not going to spend it. And if we do spend it, it won't be on anything as good as Clase. It's like,
probably not.
As a Red Sox, and this is one of those weird things as a fan, is when you're like, oh man, this guy who we were paying a lot of money is off the books now. It's like, yeah, but he's really good. It's like, we have to spend that money replacing him. The Red Sox have the joy of being like, Liam Hendricks and Lucas Giolito are gone. Okay.
Giolito is actually going to be, those innings were good this year in the regular season, and he was good. He was like their number two for most of the year. Bayo was okay, but Giolito is pretty solid, but it's almost besides the point. Like, they actually have to spend. They can't be the Walker Buehler band-aid that they tried this year, the Dustin May band-aid that they tried at the trade deadline. Like, you have to go out and actually get a number two starter. So Giolito's money on the books or not, they need innings.
I'll say this. Giolito, like, under 3.41 ERA, the underlying performance was not that good. You weren't getting that again from him next year anyways. Clearing his, what was it, 19 million this year? 20 million? It was 19, basically. 19 and a half-ish. Clearing that and knowing that the 145 innings he gave you are probably going to get covered by Tolley and Early. and hopefully. I expect, right? That's that then becomes $19 million. You can just spend where you need it. It might be a pitcher, probably is a pitcher. That is really what they need. But like, it becomes an added piece, I think. So I don't know. That's not really what we're here to talk about, though. We're not a Red Sox podcast as much as Pete might like us to be. So we're going to talk
right now
off season. And it is like just into the fantasy off season right now. You know, think about like, what are you doing in most of your leagues? And like, I don't know, Pete, I'm sending out notes being like, hey, everyone confirm you're going to be back next year. Right. That's the thing with keeper leagues, make sure everyone's around. Our listener leagues. So far, I just sent out a note to the Auto New Listener League, which we're gonna talk about that today, actually. But our other listener leagues, it looks like people are sticking around. My Auto New Leagues, there's a couple of openings here and there, but not much, which is great. Should be a quiet off season in terms of finding managers, which I always like. But the other thing I'm doing right now is I'm taking sort of first pass at what I think I'm gonna do this off season, and in you know in Auto New Leagues like. We haven't gone through arbitration yet. That starts in a couple weeks. Like you don't even know what player salaries are going to be. Really. You kind of do in non-auto new leagues. There isn't anything like that in the way, but most of my leagues are either like on hiatus or just no one's really paying attention right now. Like people are focused on the playoffs or their fantasy football teams or whatever it is they're focused on. And so it's a moment. It's this like rare moment in a keeper or dynasty format where like things are kind of quiet. You're not worried about your lineups for tomorrow. You're not worried about trades that might happen in, from some other team tomorrow. And so you have a moment to sit there and look at your roster and think like, where am I good? Where am I not? What do I need to do? And so that's sort of what I'm doing with my teams right now. In addition to honestly just, you know, taking a break and spending less time on fantasy baseball than I normally do. But Peter, are you doing anything different? Or are you sort of in the same boat?
Yeah, I think that all pretty much lines up with my approach. I'm also looking at like position eligibility. I don't know if you mentioned that or not. Like I'm in a dynasty league where my only third baseman is Rafael Devers. I'm going to need to adjust that because I've already got Vlad at first base and a lot of outfielders plugging up utility. So ideally, you know, there's a move out there, Devers for a third baseman, but, you know, it's things like that, just setting yourself up so that you're in as best a spot as you can be come February when you forget about all this stuff and you go to check your teams and you're like, oh, I'm actually in a better spot than I thought I was because I took a week or two to adjust these things.
Yeah, the position eligibility is a really good call. Auto New has already updated positional eligibility, so you can just go to your Auto New rosters and whatever's on there is accurate now, which is nice. That's not true. Like, I know my CBS Keeper League, that's not true. I'm not sure if it's true on my Fantrax leagues yet. And so you want to double check that stuff because I know, like, at least in a couple of places, I had Connor Norby as a second baseman in my lineups. And, like, I was like, okay. You know, maybe I'll keep him. He like second base is a mess. His season was not good. But like I said, you know, second base was a mess. There's still a lot of potential this in this guy. And his off, you know, his season was short in addition to being unimpressive. And so like, maybe there's some reasons to give him a pass in this one. And if he's low cost as a second baseman, he didn't play an inning of second base this year. So he is only going to be third base eligible next year. And he's way less interesting to me as a third baseman. And so, yeah, we're actually going to talk a little bit about him because he is on my roster in the Auto New Keeper League, our Auto New Listener League, I should say. And we're going to talk about those rosters today. But make sure you're looking at that. And I think if you go into, if you're in an Auto New League and you look at your roster organizer, salaries haven't updated, but if you go to your roster organizer, there's a little toggle you can flip to say include 2026 projected salary increases. And so you can see who's getting the $1, who's getting the $2 increases. You can also flip between in-season and off-season mode, although I actually think it's locked to off-season now. But off-season mode, it'll clear all your loans and cap penalties and stuff like that that go away. There's also a little box there that says miscellaneous expenses. The first thing I do in the offseason, I just go put a 30 in that. And that's my arbitration placeholder. I just assume that I'll get $30, right? Every team gets at least $11. The average team gets $25. The max you can get is 33. I just put 30 in for every single one of my teams because it helps me sort of visualize what's going on. And then if arbitration ends and I only got like 20, hey, I saved 10 bucks and I can take advantage of that. And if I got 33, it's not gonna make that much of a difference versus the 30. So I just put 30 in. But yeah, then I can look at that and I can start setting. I set a lineup of guys I think I'm going to keep and a bench of guys I think I'm going to keep. And then I've got minor leaguers I think I'll keep. And I've got players I'll cut or players I'll trade. And once you set all those players to that, you can look at the top and see like, oh, I've got 28 players I'm keeping and I'm spending $394. That doesn't work. I need to figure out where I'm going to cut costs. Or I'm keeping 28 players and I only have $100 spent. I have a ton of money to spend in the auction. That'll be good to know and good to know for trades in the offseason, stuff like that. But that's what I'm doing right now is like, I'm looking at that. There's some other things you can do in the roster organizer. You can like, if you're like, oh, I don't have a second baseman, you can click this little add target button and put in a name and a budget. And that name could be, I'm going to go get Gleyber Torres for $15. It could also be $15 for quote unquote starting second baseman. If that, you know, you don't know who it's going to be, but that's what you want to spend. I'm not doing any of that yet though. I am just dropping guys into buckets of keep, trade, cut. And I'm doing it sort of, you know, I want to say gut reaction, but like I'm pulling up player pages. I'm looking at Savant. I'm looking at pitcher list. I'm looking at fan graphs and but I'm not doing a deep dive on these guys. It's more of a like, huh, this guy's obviously a keep. This guy I'm not as sure about. Let me pull up a couple pages and see what's what. Let me look at the sliders. Deep dives are coming later.
Yeah, that sounds all about right to me. I'm kind of doing the same thing. I'm a lot of just like, what are the obvious things for me? Like the obvious keeps versus the obvious cuts, and then I'll sort out the middle. But for like the team that we're going to look at today, I had so many things go wrong with this team. You know, beginning with Yordan Alvarez and my pitching, it was just injury after injury. It was kind of all over the place. Austin Riley too, who I cut and I forgot was on this roster, which makes it kind of easy because there's a lot of young, cheap players that I want to keep. And then there's a lot of old, not old, but just way too expensive veterans that I'm going to cut. And there's not that middle ground where those decisions have to be hashed out over the next month or two. I don't have as many of those challenging discussions that I need to have with myself.
Yeah. And I think when your team isn't good, and to be clear, like you finished 10th in this league, I finished 5th. That is better than 10th. But until the end of the season, when I decided I really wanted to hang on to the top 6 so I could play OPL with this team next year, I was, and I assume you were, solving those problems during the season. Like you were talking about Austin Riley. It's like, all right, so cut him. Don't wait till January to cut him. Cut him earlier. And you're like, yeah, someone else might pick him up, whatever. It clears cash for you. It allows you to do some other things. You can start to pick up pieces to fill out your roster. You can pick up guys you think might have some upside. And so this is an interesting thing where like this time of year, my rosters on teams that didn't contend, I tend to be like, I know what I'm doing. There were a few guys who I was going to cut, but I didn't because I was like, they'd be so cheap for someone else. I'm not okay with that. There were a few guys I was going to cut, but never needed to. But almost everyone else is someone that I picked up at some point during the season. Because I was like, yeah, their future value is interesting to me. And so it's relatively straightforward. It's the leagues where I was contending that I'm like, This roster is a mess now. Because all I've been doing is trying to like get the most out of it for the last couple months. And like, I haven't been focused on the future. I haven't really thought through this stuff. And so that may make this conversation a little less interesting. Maybe we'll do it for a different league, a different week, because there may be some different leagues that we were more of a contender in. This one, not so much for either of us. But what we're going to do in today's episode is we are going to go through our rosters in that Keeper Cut Listener Auto New League. And basically go position group by position group. We'll go with corner, infield, middle infield, outfield, starting pitcher, relief pitcher. And we're going to break down each other's rosters. And we haven't talked about this at all. We haven't really, like, there's been no sort of previewing what's coming. So, like, I'm going to tell Pete what I think about, you know, who he's keeping, who he's cutting from his corner infielders. He's going to do the same for me. I don't know what he's going to say. He doesn't know what I'm going to say. So this will be interesting. We'll see if there's any disagreement here. I sort of hope there is, because it's going to be really boring if the whole episode is just me being like, you should keep this guy, and Pete being like, I agree. but we'll, I am sure we will find some names to talk about along the way. But we will start off with corner infielders, and let's throw util only and catcher into corner infield, for lack of a better place to put them. I also think for the purposes of this, Pete, we didn't talk about this before, but like, let's assume guys are going to their most valuable position. So when we say corner infielders, we're really talking just corner infield. If guys outfield eligible or middle infield eligible, we'll talk about them in those groups, because that's where they're, for now, most interesting. But your corner infielders, I'll talk about your team first. So you've got a couple of catchers, Francisco Alvarez and Edgar Cuero, $4 Alvarez, $1 Cuero. You've got one first baseman, a $1 Michael Busch. Oh, wait, sorry. These are all last year's prices. So that'll be a $6 Alvarez and a $3 Cuero and a $3 Busch. Then you've got a $3 Brady House and an $11 Marcell Ozuna. And I mean, I think some of these are pretty easy for me. I think of Francisco Alvarez and Michael Busch at $6 for Alvarez, $3 for Busch. Like, those guys are keepers. They're easy keepers for me. Alvarez has been, you could argue, disappointing versus what we thought he might be. And there's been all the time missed and stuff like that. But he still ended the year with a 339, 447 OBP and slugging, and 11 home runs and 32 runs scored in less than half a season of playing time. That's awesome from a catcher. Busch, I suppose the only question I would have with Busch is, like, I was relatively down on him coming into the season. And by relatively, what I mean is I was not out on Michael Busch. I just didn't think he was as good as he had looked last year. That has proven to be wrong. He was better this year. But those are the kind of guys that, like, at $3, if you decided, hey, I'm still sort of lower on Busch than the market, man, could you get a haul for him in a trade? That said, at $3, I don't think I wouldn't be messing with that, especially on a team that has some rebuilding to do. That's just such a nice piece to, like, first base is taken care of. It's going to be good. And you're spending nothing on it. I think that's pretty easy. So yeah, Busch and Alvarez. At the other end of the spectrum, I think House is an easy cut. I still like Brady House. I still think he has an interesting future, maybe. But he's total speculation. There's just, like, he is the kind of guy that I think people sometimes talk themselves into as, like, I liked what he did in AAA. He's an interesting prospect. I'd like to take a flyer on him. Like, that's all fine. Do it in March for a buck at the auction. And if at the auction you get pushed to $3 and he's the guy you want, fine. Like, that's okay. But you don't need to lock yourself into him for $3 now. And then Ozuna, I think, is a pretty easy cut at 11. That seems like a little bit of a crazy thing to say, given where we were a year ago, and given the fact that he's been up and down before. Like, we know he can bounce back. But 355, 400 out of a DH only, a util only, even with 20 home runs, it's just not enough for me. Not for a guy who's locked in. If he got outfield eligibility back, or even if, like, he's a free agent too, isn't he? So we don't even know where he's going to be next year. He turns 35 in a month. He does hit free agency this year. So, like, is there a world where he, you know, the Rockies sign him and announce they're installing him in right field? Okay, maybe I'll change my mind and I'll keep him at $11 at that point. But I'm pretty content to consider him a cut, at least for now, barring something unexpected. Which leaves us with Cuero as the one guy that I'm like, I don't know. I like Cuero. He didn't really show a ton this year. 333, 356 for OBP and slug. He had 5 home runs, but, like, he actually got 111 games and 403 plate appearances. Like, he's not going to do a whole lot more than that. And so I think we sort of saw what he is. And yes, there's some upside there, but I think even at $3, I don't know if there's enough.
Yeah, I mean, the question with ultimately is, where's the play time going to be? Is he a good enough hitter to see play time outside of catcher? Because they're clearly more invested in Kyle Teal at the catcher position. So unless he becomes a much better hitter over the offseason, I don't know if we're talking about a lot of ABs there. So even if he was only $1, which he couldn't be, I don't know if he's a guy I would want to use one of my $1 dart throws on. At $3, I've got him as a cut. Ozuna's going to be interesting because this team, like, I'm going to have a ton of money to spend at auction, which is nice. But I don't want to just bank on getting all my punch from the auction because, you know, the auction can sometimes be unpredictable. Actually, most of the time it's unpredictable. So Ozuna to me at $11, it's expensive and he wouldn't have been worth that this year, but he was still decent. I mean, it was an above average WRC plus, all that kind of stuff. I hear what you're saying. If I do find out ahead of time, which we probably won't because guys are signing later and later, that he signs in some place that's undesirable, then he'll probably be a cut. At this point in time, I have him in that like middle ground area that I was talking about before we got into it, where it's like, I'm not fully ready to say he's a cut yet, just because this team's going to need some punch. The 2 years before this year, he was freaking unbelievable. And like you said, I mean, this was a guy, he was going to get DFA'd by Atlanta. And then Eddie Rosario like sprained his ankle or something. And they're like, all right, I guess we got to hold on to Marcell Ozuna. Right. And they're lucky they did, because he then put forward 2 years and 2 months of elite production. So he can, it seems like, turn it on. Can you do that, you know, 3 years later when you're now 35 instead of 32 or whatever? We'll see. But he's someone I'm not ready to punt on yet, not because I'm excited about him, but because I might need him.
Yeah, I just think like that production at that position, that non-position, is replaceable. And I it's not that I'm that far away from where you are. I just think I fall on the other side of the fence a little bit, where you seem to be saying like, hey, I'm not ready to give up on him yet. Like, maybe if he lands in a bad spot, I'll be out. Whereas I'm more on the like, I don't really want to keep this guy, but if he, you know, hits the jackpot in the offseason, okay, fine, I'll deal with it. But I don't know. I don't like it. I think I'd be out. So
it does feel like he'd be moving on from Atlanta, which I don't love, because I just think that lineup was just unlucky and hurt this year. I think they're going to be so much better next year, and I'd love for him to be a part of it, but they're already trying to find play time for, it seems like, too many play. Maybe they unclog it. They trade Sean Murphy or something like that, but they're trying to feed too many mouths. It feels like Ozuna's on his way out.
Yeah, that's probably right. Let's jump over to my corner infield and catcher situation. I don't have any util-only guys, so I don't have to worry about that, but I've got a $14 Josh Naylor, a $3 Spencer Torkelson, a $3 Miguel Vargas, a $17 Royce Lewis, a $12 Itzhak Paredes, a $4 Connor Norby, a $3 Alejandro Kirk. I also have Josue Briseño as a catcher prospect, but let's leave prospects out. We'll talk prospects at the end if we have time. I have a lot more options at the corners than you do right now. I'm not sure I have that many more interesting ones, but I have a lot more options. What are your thoughts on those guys, Pete? What should I be doing here?
Yeah, so there's a lot. I'm going to try to keep up with all those names. I got it up in front of me right now, but in a slightly different order. I'm going to start with the obvious ones. I'm keeping Itzhak Paredes at $12. I'm keeping Josh Naylor at $14. I know Naylor's newfound speed, if we want to call it that, doesn't really matter at all for this format. But I still think he's a good hitter. I think he plays up in this. We'll see where he ends up, because correct me if I'm wrong, he's a free agent, right?
He is a free agent, and on top of being a free agent, like, he has been in, I believe, two not great power parks, right? Like, he was he spent obviously the second half of the season in T-Mobile, which has the 19th best park factor for left-handed home runs. And before that, he was in Chase Field, which has the, well, this is weird, it has it as the 27th best park factor on Savant, but there are 30 parks and it's only showing 28. So I'm not sure what's up with that. It might be because I'm using a 3-year rolling, and so it's not including Sacramento or the temporary Tampa park. But basically, a bottom 10 park for the second half of the season after being in a bottom 3 park or whatever for the first half. Almost anywhere he lands, and I think there's a chance that where he lands is back in Seattle. I know there's desire for that. But almost anywhere he lands is going to be an improvement. And perhaps more importantly, I'm not worried about anything. I don't think there's anywhere he could land that I'd be like, oh, that's where he is.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. And I think there's going to be some good offenses looking for first baseman. I mean, Seattle had a great offense during the regular season. So, we were talking about that before we hit record. So if he does end up going back, I feel good about that despite the park. Who knows if the Red Sox, they could be in the market for a first baseman. That position was a freaking train wreck this year. So I don't know. There could be some pretty good landing spots for Naylor. And I mean, it's almost besides the point because at $14, like, I'm just keeping him there. And keep in mind, folks, like, there's going to be inflation in this auction. So even if you started a new league, you might be like $14, Josh Naylor, like, okay, maybe $5, but he's going to be easily worth that in our draft.
Yeah. According to the Fangraphs auction calculator in this format, he was a $21 player this year.
Slam dunk.
And I there's nothing that I see there that's like, could he regress a little bit? Maybe, but like, he kind of is doing what he's been doing for a while now. And so even if he regresses back to being a $15 player, I'll still be happy I kept him. So,
yeah.
And I don't think he will.
Yeah. I agree with that. Miguel Vargas, I might want to see another year for $3. $3 is not an expensive price tag. It's tough to imagine the White Sox lineup being any worse than it was the last two seasons. Right. So if it starts to get better with guys like Teal, maybe Braden Montgomery gets a taste in the second half, we'll see. But Miguel Vargas, 25 years old, was unbelievable for the Dodgers. And then he just hasn't figured it out at the major leagues. But he went on stretches this year where he looked really, really good. And the plate discipline looks awesome. That strikeout rate was 17.6% this season for Miguel Vargas. And I think he's going to get plenty of playing time, too, which is really important for this league. It's so deep. There's not really a lot of replacement value once we get going. So to have a guy like that on the bench who, has the multi-position eligibility, I believe. Is that right? Is that what I saw there?
He's first and third.
Yeah.
He lost outfield.
That's fine. That sucks. I'd love for him to keep outfield, but still huge that he has two positions. So that's a keep. Spencer Torkelson, that's an obvious keep. So Chad has Spencer Torkelson for $1. He's going to be $3 next year. Yeah. This is now two seasons where he's hit over 30 homers, the former number one overall pick. So like he may not ever become what we all thought he could when he was drafted first overall. I still think he's obviously a keep at $3 here.
Yeah.
Then we, I guess, get into some interesting ones. Connor Norby. There's been a lot of, I shouldn't say a lot, but there's a lot of people out there that liked Connor Norby. Back when he was in the Orioles system, he looked like the minor league Mickey Mantle. And he has also gone through stretches, particularly with Miami immediately after that trade last year. He looked pretty good, but I think he's a cut at $4. And I'm trying to see, is there anybody that I'm missing there, Chad?
$17 Royce Lewis.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. That hurts. But that's a cut. Guys, it hurts because, like, we all know there's a $30 player in there somewhere. And, like, he started, like, stealing bases and stuff down the stretch. Like, it looked like he was, not that, that matters for this league, but it looks like he was, like, hitting a groove. Like, maybe Royce Lewis is getting going here. I still love the player, but there's no chance I'm keeping him at $17.
Yeah, I think I agree on Lewis. Norby is probably going to find his way to my trade block, partially because I'm not totally sure I want to give up on him yet, but more so because, as you said, like, I think there's been enough prior hype and there's going to be somebody who's like, post hype, this is it. And I think I might be able to trade him for something. I'm not getting anything special, I don't think, for him. But there may be a situation where somebody else has a $3 or $4 guy that's also sort of borderline that I'm higher on. And so I think he probably ends up on my trade block because of that. Vargas, I've gone back and forth multiple times on him because, like, the overall performance isn't quite where I was hoping it would be. But I think, like, we talked about this with Cuero a bit, where I, or was it Cuero on your team that we talked about it with, where I was like, yeah, if you want, if he's the guy you want to take a flyer on for $3, so be it. Like, that's fine. But like, don't lock yourself into it now. Vargas, unlike Cuero, like, I think he has a job. I think, like, I do think the Sox are going to put him in the lineup every day to start the year, at least, and give him a real shot. And so
the White Sox, not that the Sox. Gives it,
right. The White Sox. Sorry. So that's in his favor. And I think the line was just good enough that, like, I worry that an offseason of hype and discussion, and he's still only like 25 or whatever, like, all of a sudden he's one of these guys who is going for like $8-9 in auction.
Yeah.
And I think I want him at three. I don't think it's worth it to me to try to get him back cheaper. And I think I want him. I also kind of like, when you mentioned that dual position, if I keep the four we talked about, Torque, Naylor, Paredes, and Vargas, I now have three first base and two third base eligible players for about $30 total.
Yeah.
It's not bad. Might be a little over that. The downside of that, if you can put it that way, is that, like, when I get to the auction, I probably just can't shop in those positions at all, because I can't, like, it doesn't make sense for me to spend a bunch of money on a stud first baseman and bench one of Naylor or Torkelson. But I don't have to do that. I can spend at middle infield or outfield or wherever you and I end up deciding I have problems over the rest of this episode. So I like that. I feel pretty good about that. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, I'll jump into Pete's middle infield. All right, welcome back to the Keep or Cut podcast. Chad Young and Pete Ball breaking down each other's rosters in the Keep or Cut listener auto new league. That's League 1372. If you're listening and want to pull up the rosters and see what we're talking about, I probably should have mentioned that before. We talked about corner infield. We're going to talk now about middle infield. And we mentioned that we were going to table prospects for later. So I will, I will point out that Kevin McGonigal, Leo DeVries, and Franklin Arias are all on your roster. And I wish they were on my roster, but we're not going to talk about them yet. We may get back to prospects later, but here are the guys you have that are actual real major league players. You have a $5 Nico Horner, a $20 Jazz Chisholm Jr., a $5 Marcelo Mayer, and a $10 Anthony Volpe. This is all a much harder group for me. Let's start with Jazz. So there is not, like, this is not Jazz's best format. His speed doesn't matter. His aggression at the plate hurts him because he doesn't his OBP isn't great. It's fine. He has, 332. 30 home runs and 75 runs scored and a league average OBP and a well above league average slugging from a second baseman is worth $20. Or $22. It'll be $22. But like, I can't see letting him go. The auction calculator has him as a $25 player this year. I don't see any real reason to think he's going to be worse next year. I don't know that I'm expecting him to be better, but like, that park just suits him well. He's going to hit, like, I think he's a good bet to hit 30 home runs again. I think he's a good bet to put up a decent on base and a high slugging. And he's going to score runs, especially if he gets more opportunities earlier in that lineup. I'm keeping him. He does have third base eligibility as well, which is some nice flexibility. I suspect that his second base value will just be so high that that's where you'll use him. But I like that. Nico Horner, and actually, let's go to the other end of the spectrum and stay within New York. I'm cutting a $10 Anthony Volpe.
I think
a couple years ago, I was like pushing him up on our rankings, even this year, maybe. And when we did some preseason stuff, I was talking about like, hey, I think there could be more. It's just not happening. And maybe it will, but I'm not paying $12 to find out.
No way. Yeah. Way too expensive.
So yeah. Sorry, Mr. Volpe. This is also a case, by the way, where if he were second base eligible instead of shortstop, I'd at least think about it. because second base is so bad right now, but I'd still decide to cut him. So yeah. The two guys in the middle are they will be $7 next year, $7 Marcelo Mayer and a $7 Nico Horner. And they are both super borderline to me for different reasons. Mayer is borderline because he showed flashes of stuff, but he's really still basically a prospect. We haven't really seen what he's going to be. And what he did this year, a 15 to 20 home run pace with a really bad OBP and sort of mediocre slugging, 272 OBP, 402 slugging. $7 is a lot to pay for upside on that. However, the upside's really legit. And I guess the other challenge with him is like Story has pretty much locked down a job in that middle infield. There's no reason to think he won't, because he's not a free agent or anything, right? He's still there for a while.
No. Yeah.
And so I don't know what's going to happen with Bregman. It sounds like people think he will likely opt out, but he may want to stay. So like, we don't know what's going on at third base, which really means Mayer and or Campbell at second base, probably. But like, I don't know. Do you have a sense of who it would be? I don't.
Yeah. I mean, I would say it's almost a definite that Marcelo Mayer's their second baseman going into the season next year. There were talks that they were hoping he would be ready in the playoffs if we made it far enough, which I always thought was kind of funny because we weren't going to. But Campbell had his ups and downs in the minors this year. It was looking really bad, and then he got really hot, which was nice. But Campbell is not nearly the fielder that Marcelo Mayer is.
Right.
And I think they're going to want to keep him going at second base next season. That is almost definitely your middle infield, a Story at shortstop and Mayer at second base.
Well, if Meyer's going to be at second base, then maybe I'm a little bit more inclined to give him a shot at $7. It feels high for what he's shown us so far. And I was worried about the playing time. If you're less worried about the playing time, I could see landing. I think if it were me, I would probably put him on the trade block and see if there was somebody just higher on him than I am. The problem you have is that you're a Red Sox fan. Everyone knows you're a Red Sox fan. It's no one's going to be like, Pete's down on him, but he just doesn't know.
Like, it's actually like a weird, it's a weird anomaly that I have so many Red Sox on this team, because like, I think I talked about this in the past. I try to avoid Red Sox. It's just, you'll notice most of them are prospects or guys who I had at really good prices. Which is why I'm going to hold on to them. I really like Mayer. And I mean, it's almost, I guess the price doesn't matter, because if you don't like him at $7, you don't like him at $7. But if I let him go into auction and he is the starting second baseman for the Boston Red Sox, there is just no chance I get him for $7 at auction. So yeah. I guess it comes down to if you like the player or not, because you're not going to get him for this cheap of a price at auction.
Fair enough. I could see that. I don't, like I said, that, and that's probably why if I had him, I'd put him on my trade block, because somebody out there who likes him is going to say, if I don't get him now, I'm not getting him.
Yeah.
Right. Even if they think I'm going to cut him, there's good reason for them to think like, yeah, but I'm not going to get him cheaper anyway. So, and then Nico Horner, sort of the other end of the spectrum, where like, rather than not knowing what we're going to get for him, like he's going to put up a decent on base. He's going to hurt you in power. He's going to score a ton of runs. Is that worth $7 at a pretty weak position? I don't know. And I think given the makeup of your team, he becomes a cut or a trade, because you're going to lock Jazz in at second base. And I think you can go find two shortstops. Like, even let's table Mayer for a moment. Assume that he's on your bench to start the season, because you just want something more reliable. Even if you like him, you're like, I'll pay $7 for him to be my multi-position bench guy. I think you can go get a couple of shortstops for reasonable prices, even for a second one, who do more for you overall than Horner does, unless you're going to just take advantage of him and, I don't know, build a low on base, high power team and let him try to make up the difference. But like, his on base percentage isn't really good enough to do that. So I think that's the biggest thing for me with Horner is like, he scored a ton of runs. That Cubs lineup is good. He'll probably continue to score a ton of runs unless he could get back to like a three or get, not even get back to get up to like a 360 on base instead of 340s. I just don't think there's enough there in this format.
Yeah. It's a really tough call because even if I did what you said and like didn't view Meyer as my starting shortstop, which I might not, right, those two guys that we have penciled in right now, Chisholm and Marcelo Meyer, like they can't stay healthy. I hate to say that about two guys that are so young, especially in Meyer's case, but like those are two dudes that literally can't stay healthy. I mean, Jazz did last year, but then he missed 32 games this year. It would be nice to have maybe multiple options instead of just Nico Horner to back those two up. But like you have to consider who's going to go in there when those two guys miss time.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Let's take a look at my middle infielders and the guys I have. This is the opposite, right? Last time I was like, oh, I have so many more options than you. This time I have a $3 Jorge Polanco. And then I've got $21 Ellie De La Cruz and a $4 Geraldo Perdomo. I've got prospects as well, but like Satebulo knows. It's just those three guys. I mean, I could just call those guys my starting middle infield and be done. I don't know if I want to.
Yeah, look, two of them are, in my opinion, obvious keeps. I mean, obviously, Ellie De La Cruz is a slam dunk keep. And after this, I mean, Geraldo Perdomo, I stopped paying attention to the MVP race, but is he going to be a finalist? Like, it's obviously going to be Ohtani and Schwarber, but is the third name going to be Perdomo? I don't know. I don't know if that's been decided yet or not, but like, he was that good this year. So $4, like, he's absolutely a keeper. And then maybe you decide, just because you only have two on your entire 40-man roster, that you just want to pencil in Polanco at $3. I think you might be able to find better in the auction if you put that money towards it. But he had 26 homers this year. I think I'm keeping all three of those guys.
Yeah, I mean, here's Ellie. Okay, Perdomo is obvious, right? Like, even if you don't really fully believe that Perdomo is what he looks like or what he was this year, which I get, I totally get, like, you watch him play and you're like, there's just no way this guy's going to regularly hit 20 home runs. Fine. He is going to be a high on base guy and he could fall off so much and still be worth $4 that this is just not a hard choice. And Ellie, this was a bad year for Ellie. Like, I don't think anybody would disagree with that. He did not perform the way we expected he would. This was a down year. He still scored 102 runs, hit 22 home runs, had a decent 336 on base, and a good 440 slugging. The auction calculator pegs Ellie at, I just had it. Oh, here we go. $23 this season. I can keep him at 21 or 19. I keep him at 19, right?
21, I think.
21. I can keep him at 21. He was at 19 this year. If he is as bad next year as he was this year, and I keep saying he was bad. It was a down year for what we expected. He did not live up to expectations. If he is the same next year as he was this year, he'll be worth this. And if he refines his a little bit more power and a little more aggression on the base paths and things get him better again, the sky's still the limit with this guy. So I think that makes sense. Polanco is the tough one only because his track record is so spotty. Like, he was very good this year. Last year, he was awful. The year before that, he missed half the season, but was good. The year before that, he didn't have much power. The year before that, he was excellent. The year before that, the year before that was 2020. The year before that, he was also excellent. But the 2020 season, shortened season, was bad. He's been hot and cold forever. He is now 32. He'll be 33, not till the middle of next season. But like, you know, he's on the downswing of his career. I think the thing with him is, as hot and cold as he's been, and as much as he's getting up there in age, at $3, his value this year, on that auction calculator was almost $20. He was the number six second baseman for this format. And I don't think I can give that up, especially not having another second baseman on my roster. I just don't think I can. And so he's a keep. Would I trade him if somebody came along and was more confident in him than I am? I might, but it would depend what the return was and how good I felt about being able to find another second baseman at some point. But second base is so ugly. I mean, let me read to you the top 12 second basemen for the auction calculator for this format. Ketel Marte was number one at $40. Jazz, we just talked about, number two at 25. Bryce Terang at 24. Brandon Lau at 21. Jonathan Aranda at 20. Polanco at 20. Michael Garcia at 18. Jose Altuve at 18. Mookie Betts at 13. And then you get down. That's only nine, by the way. Now you're at Gleyber Torres for 12. Jordan Westberg for 8. Zach McKinstry at 7 is the 12th best. Brendan Donovan, Nico Horner, Jake Cronenworth, Romy Gonzalez, Colt Keith, Spencer Horowitz, Spencer Steer, although he won't be second base anymore. Brett Beatty. It drops off real fast. And I just, like, do I want to go into next season relying on Polanco to be the guy for me? I don't think so. But I don't want to go into the auction relying on finding somebody else. And so I think what I'll do is I'll keep him. And the nice thing with him is he is second base and third base. And so if I'm like, oh, I really don't know, and it turns out that like Ketel is available and I decide that's where I'm going to make a splash at auction, then I've got Polanco to back him up. And I've got Polanco to fill in at third base as needed. And if Polanco is great again, then I'll trade one of them.
Like, yeah.
I can do that later. So I think he's a keep. Maybe a guy I would trade, but I think he's a keep.
Yeah. I mean, look, if you get an offer that you can't refuse, then I'd take it. But like, this is kind of similar to what I was saying about Marcella Meyer, where even if you're not that high in the player, there's no chance you're getting him for only $3 at auction. He just hit 26 homers from the worst position, arguably, in fantasy besides catcher. So like, that alone is going to make him go for more than that. And look, even if he's getting older, because the age, you know, you mentioned the age, and I think it's worth bringing up, this is a guy with a career pulled air rate of 23.9%. And he's coming off 2 years where it was at 28.8 and 25.2 this year. So like, as he gets older, if he starts hitting the ball with a little bit less thump, it's still, his power is still going to play up because of how often he pulls and he lifts it. And that is like a proven skill for him that he's done for a whole career now. So
right.
I think he'll age okay. And I think he's worth it at $3.
Yeah. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll turn our attention to the outfield, maybe get to the mound if we have time. All right, welcome back to the Keeper Cup podcast. We're going through our rosters in League 1372 in Auto New, the Keeper Cup Listener League. We've talked about our infielders and who we're keeping, who we're cutting. And Pete, I'm looking at your outfield now, and you mentioned all the Red Sox, and I feel like I didn't really believe you, but you do have all the Red Sox. but I'm going to go through these guys one by one. Starting at the top, you have a $53 Yordan Alvarez.
See you later.
I think you have to cut him. It kind of sucks. In the Fangraphs staff league that we're in, that Niv and I co-manage a team, Niv and I picked up a Yordan Alvarez who was cut. We originally cut him, and then he got cut again, and we picked him back up in like the 30s. And we're going to have a tight budget situation next year because we did that with him and with Mookie Betts and with Corey Seager. And I think maybe with someone else, we have like a bunch of dudes at those kind of prices. It's not someone else that we kept. We also have a $31 Schwarber and like a $64 Soto. And we just like, we can't really keep all those guys. And at the 30s, we're like, man, we really don't want to give up a 30-ish dollar Yordan Alvarez, $35, whatever he is. At 53, I just think there's just not enough upside beyond that to justify the risk. And if you go to auction, you're like, man, he's the best outfielder out there, and I'm gonna have to spend 50 to get him back. Fine. I think that's fine. But yeah, I'm with you. I think he needs to be cut. Jarren Duran, you have him. He will be $18 next year. He was worth $14 this year, according to the auction calculator. I think this comes down to a question of whether you think 2025 Duran or 2024 Duran is the real Duran, or if the truth lies somewhere in between. And if the truth lies somewhere in between, he's probably a keep at 16. If you think that last year was just sort of a thing that happened and is not going to be like what we saw this year is who he is, he's a cut, I think. But I tend to believe that he is better than he showed this year, even if he's not as good as he showed last year. And that's probably enough to justify keeping him.
Interesting. I have him penciled in as a keep right now. I don't feel that great about it. I think, first of all, I think he's a huge trade candidate for this team. They have such a cluster of outfielders, and he can't hit lefties. He can't hit them. He hit them okay in 2024, which is why he had such a monster season. But that just went right down the tubes this season. All that progress that he maybe made against lefties just completely disappeared. He had an 88 WRC plus against lefties in 2024. That went down to a 61 this year in 2025. I mean, he just couldn't hit lefties. And so you got this like young team who had really no business kind of making the playoffs this year, made it, looks good, so much stuff on the rise. And here's this guy who kind of feels like a leftover. And I just don't know if there's going to be a spot for him. Now, there could be a spot for him on another team, obviously, where maybe he can, you know, have another season where he has almost 700 plate appearances and does really well. It just, there's so much in flux for me with Jarren Duran right now that I'm not exactly ready to commit to not such an expensive price tag, but like what would have been an overpay for this year, you know? So I'm really borderline on Duran.
Yeah, I think that's right. And I think he's another one of those, like, probably ends up in my trade block if it's me. But I think at the end of the day, I think I would keep him, but it really does depend on what happens in the offseason and where he lands. And I don't know. He is also the kind of guy who, like, I am very curious what the projections say, because, like, I don't really know what to make of him. And so sometimes when that's the case, I just, like, I need to see what the computers are telling me. Next on your list is Josh Lowe. I was so excited about the start of his season. I felt really good about where he was. And then he fell off. And then early in the second half, it looked like he was bouncing back, and he was not. It was a dead cat bounce. His season just sort of went straight downhill. And if you look up a rolling graph of his WOBA for the last 3 years, the trend line is really clear and obvious. It is going down. And I think I'm just done with Josh Lowe. I say that now, and I will inevitably pick him up for like $4 more than I should in March. But I'm not keeping him at $9. There's no way.
You just got a sign from the baseball gods, because Jorge Polanco just took Tarek Skubal deep. So I think you have to keep him now at $3.
Oh my God. If he saves the Mariners season, then that would do it for me.
Like that was a freaking sign. And I'm done with Josh Lowe. I hate to say it.
I was trying to figure out what sign I got about Josh Lowe while we were talking. I was like, what could he possibly be doing right now?
Yeah. He just tweeted out what he's eating for dinner, and it looks so good. But no,
so good.
Jorge Polanco homering off Tarek Skubal while we're recording after just talking about him. Best pitcher in baseball. Like, that's, you got to keep him now. I'm sorry. That's just something you have to do. But yeah, no, Josh Lowe, pains me to say, because I've been in on him for what feels like an eternity now, and it has netted me pretty much nothing, and I am done with Josh Lowe.
Yeah. Next guy on your list is a $7 Roman Anthony. Other than the fact that once arbitration's over, he won't be $7, he's a keep. So
yeah, I'm glad we discussed that.
Brenton Doyle, $7. I think he's got to be a cut.
Yeah.
He had a much better second half. And let me just, I'm going to double check. I'm going to pull up a couple of things here. So he had a 253 WOBA in the first half. It was 333 in the second half. Now that's only a 100 WRC plus, but that's because Coors messes with WRC plus. But it was a 312 on base, 467 slugging. It looks pretty good. A lot of that gain was BAPIP. It was ISO as well, but BAPIP went from 255 to 350. With him and with Coors, I trust the 350 more than I trust the 255. It's probably too high, but I still trust it more. The other thing with him is he had a 359 home WOBA. Not a surprise. But he was still good enough to be even in this down year, to be an easy choice everyday starter when they were at home. 341 on base, 502 slugging. That, and you're like, oh, that means I only use him half the time. But like, if I told you he was a guy who mashes righties and doesn't hit lefties, you'd be like, oh, I'll just bench him against lefties. And I kind of think that's who he is, where you can start him every single game at Coors, and you could probably pick 20 to 40 other games over the course of the season that he's fine. And I think that's probably even more true. See if I can pull up quickly his home splits or his home road splits. His away splits is actually what I want for the second half of the season. No, he was still really bad away in the second half of the season. So yeah, maybe you only can use him at home, but at $7, I'm not sure he's not worth playing just at home. He may be the case where like his performance overall was so bad and people are so down on him that you can cut him and get him back. But like, I'm interested in him as a guy I just play half the time in a deep format like this, where I've got enough bench spots to bench him half the time. I'm interested in that.
Yeah. And you brought up, you could probably find other games to play him in when he's on the road. He did in 2025 anyway, hit lefties very well, 840 OPS in the season with a 306 average. It's just against righties, he was so bad this year that
yeah.
At $7, I think I'm just out on Breton Doyle.
Yeah.
588 OPS against righties.
After Doyle, you've got a couple of prospects, and then you've got a $3 Kevin Alcantara, who I guess is not a prospect because he debuted, and so we'll talk about him. Maybe he'll have a job in Chicago, but I don't think he will, and so I'm probably not keeping him at $3.
Agreed.
So that was your outfield. Let's turn over to my outfield. I've got a $27 Christian Yelich, $24 Teoscar Hernandez, $21 Ian Happ, $17 Riley Green, $10 Carey Carpenter, $8 Matt Wallner. I think it is still a $6 Chase DeLauder because he debuted after salary increases, I think. I'm not sure how that works. I'll have to ask Niv. I don't know what Chase DeLauder is going to cost me, either $6 or $7. A $5 CJ Kafis. And a $3 of George Valera. All the Guardians that got called up late in the season, I've got. It's a lot of names to get through. So how do you want to go through this?
I think we can lump two together. I'd love to like start building my outfield around a reasonably priced Christian Yelich and a reasonably priced Teoscar Hernandez. Like I feel fine with those two, assuming they don't get hit too hard in arbitration. Ian Happ.
I want to pause there, because here's the thing. $27 Yelich, I think I agree. I want to keep. He is a little bit borderline for me, but he hit 29 home runs. He had 88 runs scored. He played 150 games, which is a big deal coming off the back surgery and all that. The on-base and slugging are fine. 343, 452, like that'll play. Teoscar,
yeah,
25 home runs. He only managed 65 runs despite that lineup, and it was a 284 on base, just a huge drain on my on base. I was benching him for big chunks of the season. I don't think I can hang onto him at that price.
Yeah, I missed the OBP, and it's especially bizarre because he's never really been a high OBP guy, but just last year he had a 339, which that plays up. I think,
right,
because the next guy was gonna like kind of have a hard decision on would be Ian Happ at $21, but I think I'm just not gonna keep Teoscar, and I'll just keep Ian Happ for, you know, $3 cheaper. Because I do think Ian Happ plays up in this format pretty well. I think $21 for him is actually really fair. So just replace Teoscar with Happ, and now I feel like I'm building my outfield in a way that I really like. I think the tough decision really comes with Kerry Carpenter, because I know you're a big Kerry Carpenter guy. You know, you have all these, like, obviously Riley Green's a keeper. We don't even need to talk about that one. I kind of would just say go ahead with the Guardians and see what you've got. I mean, Chase DeLotter, right, man, is
I'm keeping DeLotter.
Expensive for a guy that lives in a hospital, but like
I love that guy. And I don't know how much you watched of, so he, you know, I'm sure you saw the clip of his first play in the outfield. Did you see this?
I did not.
You know, they slot him in center field for his debut. He hasn't played center field this year. He played like 10 games in double A last year. They put him in center field. It's where we needed him. First ball of the game, lazy fly ball to center field. He dropped it, hit his glove, and he dropped it. After that, though, worked a great walk in his first at bat, had two batted balls over 100 miles per hour that first game. Like, he looked like he belonged. Okay. And I've been a fan of his for a long time. I think the fact that they brought him up when they did tells me he's going to be their opening day, either center fielder or right fielder next year. I'm in. $6, $7, I don't care. I'm in.
All right. Well, that definitely makes me feel a lot better about Marcelo Meyer then. But I Kerry Carpenter for me is the tough one. So like DeLotter, yeah, I'd keep Valera for a buck. Why not? Like I said, Riley Green's a keep. I don't know if I'm missing anybody there. I don't think I am. We're cutting Teoscar, Parker Meadows,
Matt Wallner, CJ Kafis.
I missed Wallner. I think I'm cutting because now I have too much, not too much depth. That's not a bad thing, but I don't need Kafis. Wallner, how did I miss him? Where is he? Oh, because he's on the IL down there. Yeah, that's a tough one. I think Wallner and Kerry Carpenter are the tough ones. Parker Meadows, you and I have long been fans. I know he started to break out of it, but man, things were getting extremely, extremely ugly for Parker Meadows. And with how much depth you have, you might want to spend that $4 elsewhere. Either way,
I don't think I have. I cut Meadows earlier.
Oh, he's still showing on my screen here. Huh. Well, either way. All right. So that's an easy one. I think the tough decisions are Kerry Carpenter and Matt Wallner.
Yeah. Here's the thing is like, I really like the idea of a $10 Kerry Carpenter. I really like the idea of an $8 Matt Wallner. I'm not sure I love the idea of an $18 Kerry Matt Wallner Carpenter. It's just, it's a lot of like, there's probably not a lot of OBP. There's probably a lot of power. I think given the choice, Carpenter's the pick. He had the lower OBP this year, but I don't think that sticks. I think he's a pretty good bet to improve on that next year. He's walking a ton in the postseason right now. He's walking a ton in the postseason, therefore his OBP is going to be fine. It's not a statement I would make. But I think that Carpenter's the one I would pick. But then Wallner in 100 games, 22 home runs. I don't know. I think it may come down to what else I end up doing with, like, I've got, and we are not going to get to the pitchers today. We'll have to do them another time. But I have 4 or 5 $20 to $30 pitchers. I do have, like, I've got this $27 Yelich, and I've got, we talked about Teoscar, and you know, you have Happ as a keep. I'm not sure I want to keep Happ. I'm
interesting.
At over $20, I want better than a 420 slugging out of an outfielder in this format. And if he were 360 420 instead of 340 420, then I might be like, okay, I get it. But I just don't know. So like, I think it comes down to some of that. And then you get into a question of just like roster construction overall, because if like Carpenter and Wallner are helped out a little bit by the fact that, like, if Naylor's my first baseman, he's decent OBP, but relatively low slugging for our first baseman. He's great overall, but like having a couple of outfielders who are platoon guys, they're only going to play, you know, 2/3 of the time or whatever, 3/4 of the time each, who are going to make up for any power Naylor leaves on the table while Naylor makes up for any OBP they leave on the table, might work okay. So I may end up, I may decide I like the two of them better than Hap, and then I dump Hap, whether it's trade or cut or whatever, with the idea that I'm going to go out and buy another high OBP guy and basically try to create a situation where between Carpenter, Wallner, and some player yet to be named, I have I have all those stats covered. That's sort of the what I might do. I haven't really decided. Like I said, it's still early. But yeah, that's where I'm sort of landing, I think. But then Riley Green is the same thing. 313 OBP with a 493. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. That's tough. I think I let me put it this way. I think Ian Happ, either way, do you decide to cut him, you're probably going to be able to use those dollars on something that's going to help your team. But I also think if you keep him, he has a pretty safe floor. So even if the slugging that's isn't true. That attractive, I think he's pretty good in the other three categories, and he's going to play every day on a really good team. So like that floor to me is, I'm okay spending $21 on that. I'm not going to pay $45 for little upside, but safe floor, but I'll do that for a guy right. like Ian Happ at 21.
That's fair. Well, I mentioned that we were not going to get to the mound. I've got, I'll be honest, like I haven't quite covered all of your pitchers yet, because you and I both have a similar situation with our pitching staffs where I think the conversation's going to take a while. You know, I've got guys like Pablo Lopez, Logan Gilbert, George Kirby, Corbin Burns. You've got guys like Logan Webb, Michael King, Tanner Bibee, Aaron Nola. You've got a cheap Gerrit Cole, but then you've got Jonah Tong, you've got Bubba Chandler, you got Jacob Lopez, you've got Noah Cameron, you've got Ryan Weathers, like a lot of inexpensive, potentially interesting names. I've got Connelly Early, Joey Cantillo, Ryan Nelson, Nolan McLean, Trey Savage, Joe Boyle. Yeah, we've got a lot of guys that are like going to need some time. So I think we're going to wait on that. But let's talk the prospects on these rosters really quickly. And I'll start with yours. I mentioned before these guys will be $2 next year. Kevin McGonigal, Leo DeVries, Franklin Arias. I think those are your only three offensive prospects. And I'm not going to
get two more
of the pitchers.
I got Spencer Jones and Josue DePaula.
Oh, Jones and Josue DePaula. Jones will also be $2. DePaula will be $3. I think there's a roster construction question here about whether you want to keep five offensive prospects. But I don't see any reason why you wouldn't want to keep these five if you're going to keep five. If you're going to get rid of one, I think Arias is the one I would drop. And if I were going to get rid of two, probably DePaula. The power isn't quite as good as some of the others on this list. And he's a Dodger. And it's funny. I hear people being like, oh, I love Dodger prospects. They do such a good job, Scott, and blah, blah, blah. Like, yeah, but like I don't feel like it's all that often that they get a real shot and you find out who they are. And so you like sit on them forever waiting for that opportunity until they get traded to the White Sox and become Miguel Vargas. Like that's right. And now it's not totally fair. Cause like if you sat and waited for Andy Páez, that's worked. He's been good. But I don't know that I believe that DePaula is going to be, I think you're going to be waiting so long. Cause I think it's at least a couple years. Unless he gets traded, which he might.
He's also marginally more expensive, which does make that decision a little bit easier.
So I think if I had to get rid of them, whereas like I think Jones, like he'll be up next year at some point. Mm-hmm. DeVries, Oakland has shown a willingness to move guys. I think DeVries will get a look. Or so he's not with Oakland anymore. He is with Oakland now. He's not with San Diego anymore. I think that they'll give him a look. I don't think McGonigal's that far away, and Detroit, like they want to compete, and shortstop is kind of a problem for them. I know that Javi Baez had that, like,
before the other two.
Yeah. So
that would be my guess.
Yeah. So I think you could keep all five of those guys, but Arias would be my first cut and DePaul my second, or I'd be looking to trade. Or like I said, if you decide like, hey, I've got the room on the roster for it, so be it. My offensive prospects, I am in a similar boat. I've got five names on this list and I don't know if I can keep five. Josue Briseño, catcher for the Tigers, is $2. Connor Griffin at $3. Chase DeLauder. Oh, we talked about DeLauder, so I only have four. I'm moving him up. My roster organizer hasn't been updated during the playoffs. So Connor Griffin, $3. Josue Briseño at $2. Braden Montgomery at $4. Carson Bangy. I should look that up. The Mets prospect at $3. Griffin is getting some like top prospect in baseball hype these days. There's just no way I'm cutting him. The other guys, I kind of think they're all pretty close. Like the Mets may have Bangy in center field opening day next year. I don't think there's a lot blocking Briseño. I don't think Dylan Dingler's that good or that much of a problem, and they could share the job. And the White Sox are like, you know, still lacking talent. And so if Braden Montgomery's ready, he's going to be ready. What are your thoughts on those four?
Yeah, I mean, Griffin, like you said, that's an obvious key. I can't believe you got him for $2. Yeah. I think that one's obvious. From there, so much of prospects is like, if you really like them, like if they're your guy, you just hold on to them, because that $1, $2, $3 is not going to kill you at the auction. Right. Montgomery, I like a lot. He did have a nice year. He's had strikeout problems when he was drafted. Strikeout problems were acknowledged. And last year at a 29% strikeout rate spread across three different levels in the minor leagues. That usually doesn't get better in the major leagues. So
his strikeout rate last year in the minors was 25%.
I'm getting
across three levels. It got up to 28.7 in AA. Which is not to say like that was the highest level, right? It was 22.6 in A ball, 24.1 in high A, 28.7 in double A. That is not to counteract your main point, which is like if it's 29% in double A and it goes up to 31% in triple A, and like it's a problem. He needs to improve.
He's got swing and miss issues. And there isn't enough. Certainly at the surface, because he does have plenty of upside underneath, but there's not enough at the surface right now for me to be like slam dunk keep, only because he's going to cost $4. If he was going to cost you $2, I think I would feel a lot differently about that, but I think you can get him back at auction for $2 if you really like him that much.
I think that's fair. And I also think, like, as I was commenting on before him, you know, I think his timeline could be quick because what are the White Sox at blocking him? I think that strikeout rate's important because he's probably not ready to leave double A yet. And he may spend a good chunk of time until he goes through like a 2 month stretch of 25% strikeout rate in double A. And then he'll go up to triple A and maybe have to do the same thing in triple A, like show us for a couple months that you can keep it down to 25%. And so if that's the case, he may be further away than I thought, right? Because the White Sox are still not going to be good next year. And so they're not going to call him up in like June or July, I don't think. Mm-hmm. I think if he's not ready early, they're going to have him wait till late. They'll maintain his rookie eligibility and all that kind of fun stuff. And so we may be looking at him as more a 2027 guy, and then at $4, and I have to wait till he's $5. And maybe he gets a cup of coffee in September. And so instead of $5, he becomes $6. And I've learned nothing.
Right.
I do think while I was talking up Briseño, catcher prospects are slow, and he's either a catcher prospect or a first base prospect. And so he either is going to have to learn to catch, or he's going to have to meet the first base offense bar. And so there's some risk involved with him as well.
Yeah. I think the only situation where I'd really care to keep a catcher prospect is if it's someone otherworldly, like, you know, Adley Rutschman was, or if I had like a need. And so I needed to like take a chance that someone gets called up. You don't have that need. Like Alejandro Kirk is fine. Like he's actually really good. So right. I don't think you would need to keep a catcher prospect.
All right. Well, that makes sense. I think that I'll probably, you know, we'll see what the ratings look. Because the other thing with prospects is like, what are the rankings going to say? And like, if Briseño is suddenly showing up as a top 10 prospect, then he's either a trade or a keep.
Yeah.
Right. But if he's not, and he's like, because I didn't pick him up because of rankings. I picked him up because his numbers are good. And I saw some scouting reports that look good. But if people are like, yeah, he's good. He looks great. He's, you know, he's a clear top 100 kind of guy rather than being a top 20 kind of guy, then I probably don't need to sit on him. So
yeah, that makes sense.
All right. Well, we've gone plenty long here. I volunteered to edit this again, and now I'm regretting that because I'm gonna have to find time to do that. But thank you all for going through this with us. We will, whether it's next week or the week after, we'll be back to look at the pitching staffs for these two teams. Like I said, that should be a really fun one because there's some fun names in those two pitching staffs. So should be an interesting one. Hope you join us then.